Hey, everybody. Welcome to 90s Court. I'm Andy.
And I'm Lisa.
And we're so glad that you're back for episode 68.
You know what that means? Next week is...
Noice.
Noice. I'm giving the okay hand, but you can't see it.
Usually, because okay. Everybody else has their own personal reactions. Mine is always the South Park reaction when they say, nice. Whenever the episode where, God, Kyle's little brother is dating the preschool teacher or something like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is long overdue covering South Park. That's gotta be coming up.
Oh, is South Park in the 90s?
Absolutely, dude.
Okay.
I'm almost positive. Okay, well, we're about to circle back.
We're not doing
that
this week,
are we? We're not doing that today. No, we're not doing
that. So let me tell you, just because I think we might have forgotten it the past couple weeks. So this is 90s Court, which is a show where Lisa and I, we take two things from the 90s and pit them together in court. And then you, the jury, will decide on social media via IG, Facebook, and Twitter who you think was the best.
Yes.
Or just, you know, even if it wasn't the best, maybe you just liked it more. You know?
Yes.
Screw which one was better. Sure, one got 85% on Rotten Tomatoes and one got 15, but damn it, you like that shitty movie.
That's true.
And then we also do like to cover a couple smaller things from the 90s that maybe you haven't thought of in a million years and not many other people have, but if it hits you, it's going to hit you real hard and you're going to be like, oh my God, yes. Can I say that? Because that's just probably what you'll say is, oh my God, yes.
Yes, I got a lot of that response for the disposable camera stuff. People were like, "Whoa!" It was old science. A lot. Can you imagine?
Old science, robots old in science. Disguise.
So in addition to what we cover in the show, we also have a Patreon, which is available at patreon.com/90score. And oopsie,
we goofed.
The last couple of weeks, we forgot to do some shout outs. So we're just going to do them all.
So this week, we're doing Oops All Bailiffs.
Oops, All Bailiffs. Ready? I'm going to take a few of them. We're going to say a thank you to Jason. Mm-hmm. Vincent, as always.
How
thank you
handsome.
For always keeping me. Mm. Vincent always, he's an espresso dude as well. He's always on me to like, hey, clean your machine. I'm like, oh, you're right. I need to clean my machine. So thank you for. So we just have similar machines. And we're on a similar schedule. And he'll message me like, hey, time to clean your machine. I'm like, oh, you're right. And so, you know, we give comedy and he gives me Siri style reminders to clean my espresso machine. So I'd like to give another shout out to Nate as well. Tim, thank you so much. Clarissa, we love you. And Preston, oh dear Preston, thank you guys.
Before we get to the other ones that I'm about to mention, we forgot to mention just a moment ago, this episode in particular came from the mind of our dear friend Preston, who had been with us for quite some time. He subscribed for a month to the executioner level of Patreon, which allowed him to both pick an episode and be on an episode. He declined being on an episode and just said, you know, if you guys have someone else, you can put them on. If not, that's okay. Unfortunately, with the time we had, we just didn't end up thinking of another person to come on. So we just were like, oh, well, let's cover the episode. And if he insists, maybe we'll have a third person on in a later episode.
I can always pretend to be Preston during my own court case as well. Just like have commentary back and forth. But yeah, Preston, thank you. He's one of our supporters. And thank you for this episode. I hope that we do it justice. We will see what happens. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, we'll probably, I'm going to be honest, we're probably going to make fun of the things a lot more than you'd probably care for.
Sorry, Preston.
So, and of course, our other bailiffs, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us and being rad. Jake, you two are a rock star and rad, and always love hearing from you on Messenger with various comments and pictures of things. Jacqueline, love you. Thank you so much for being on board with us. Michael, my man, always again, appreciate your comments in the Facebook group. Afty Wafty, what can I say?
Afty.
You've been here through thick and thin. Send us messages about stuff every once in a while, and it's been a long, strange road, huh, kid?
Was that a yearbook signing right there?
Yes.
See you next summer.
Dear Afty Wafty.
Dear Afty Wafty.
David, thank you so much. David is actually the person who pointed out, he's like, hey, did you ever notice that like you just did 2 weeks in a row without Patreon shoutouts? And I'm like, you know what? I didn't. And that's our bad. So thank you for pointing that out. Mm-hmm. And of course, Anthony, thank you again so much. You all are amazing and we love you for supporting the show. And
can we just take a moment and realize that that's actually a pretty good number of supporters. I am honored. Like, I feel so happy right now.
No, I mean, dude, like, the fact
when
that
they're all together like this.
Yeah, the fact that there were even, like, three people.
I know.
That were like, hey, I'm willing to pay money for content or, you know, just to
or
support
just say
your
that you
show.
Like us. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, 13
that was so
is
nice.
Pretty nice, so.
Yeah.
So, we do have things, as we mentioned, that we like to cover and discuss that are a little bit lesser known things from the 90s. And this week, Lisa is going to be going first. So, Lisa, tell me about some things, huh?
I know what you guys want to hear about. I know what you want to hear about more than anything
right
now.
I bet you it's something that we don't want to hear about at all.
It's politics.
Oh.
I'm talking politics.
Good.
I know. And not just politics. I'm the president. But not, listen, I'm doing it 90s style already. Okay. No one wants to hear it, but like, trust me, this is going to be delightful, okay? Mm-hmm. Beginning in 1993, the 42nd president of the United States took office, and that man was none other than Bill Clinton.
William
Clinton.
His million middle name was Billiam, so Billiam. It's a well-known fact.
If I could change my name to a man's name, I would be Billiam 100%. So prior to his presidency, he was the governor of Arkansas, where he was born. And while he was growing up, Clinton was not only in choir, but he also played the tenor saxophone.
Yeah, he did.
And he was so good at it that he was also first chair in the state's band, like, saxophone section. So I don't know if you know this, but like, in your band, you get first chair, which is, you know, an honor in and of itself, meaning you're the best one in that particular instrument section. And then you get to go on to playing in state level bands, which I think I participated in some in high school, but to be first chair in the state, it's like, you're pretty damn good, mister. And so what I wanted to talk about today is the innocence and simultaneous hilarity of seeing a presidential candidate turned actual president just being like, okay, I also play the saxophone, so here I go, I'm gonna play the saxophone now. Like, according to his autobiography titled My Life, Clinton actually aspired to be a professional saxophone player at some point, but knew he'd never be the next John Coltrane. Aww. So he was like, you know what? I'm just going to go try to be the president instead. Okay.
It's wild when you give up your dreams and then become president of the United States.
This is like a second thing. This is like secondary to becoming a saxophone player for life. But like, he just used a skill of his to impress people. And I'm not saying that he wasn't a good saxophone player, because he absolutely was. But it's just hilarious to me to see him on the campaign trail being like, okay, saxophone time. And in a very well-known moment from the 90s, Clinton appeared on the Arsenio Hall show on June 3rd, 1992. And at the time, he was 45 years old, which is pretty young and sprightly for a presidential candidate.
Yeah.
But for the record, at the time, most presidential candidates stuck to serious news programs only, but Clinton wanted to set himself apart and appeared on the Arsenio show with his fucking saxophone. And on this appearance, he played Heartbreak Hotel and God Bless the Child. And honestly, he was pretty good. Now, this performance had some conservatives calling him the MTV president and Slick Willie, which ended up sticking with him well beyond
Slick
this campaign.
Willie is such Slick a good name Willie. For anything.
Slicky Billiam. Is what I would like to be called. Someone call me Slicky Billiam. But of course, even after winning the presidency, he did not stop. He was just like, I'm the president of the United States. Also, I'm still going to play the saxophone for
I think
you.
I was
now.
Like,
okay, here
really,
we go.
Literally, he's like, if I become the president of the United States, they have to listen to me play now.
It's like, you have no choice. I hire people. I pay people to sit here and listen to me, and they love it. This is what I do. So there's like a video of him playing at a White House party for the 90th birthday of jazz musician Lionel Hampton. And then he also played on the 40th anniversary of the Newport Jazz Festival, which is rad. The Newport Jazz Festival. If you're not familiar, there's this incredible documentary called Jazz on a Hot Summer's Day or something like that. And it's just footage from the Newport Jazz Festival. It's beautiful. Anita O'Day. I just love it. But that was on the White House lawn, and he, of course, played there. And, of course, at his inauguration, there was a massive saxophone performance, and he looked like a fucking kid in a candy store. This, like, huge smile on his face. And it's just the nerdiest, cutest thing to look back in political history and be like, this is the sweetest shit that a 40-something-year-old man running for the office of the president is like, I also play the saxophone.
Just FYI.
It's just FYI. It's just looking back of everything that I mean, politics right now are insane. We don't need to go into like current events, but like looking back at that, I was like, that is the most endearing thing. Like Bill Clinton or not, it's just kind of funny to be like, that's what you brought to the table. Like, I can help with, you know, it's the economy.
Really put my chips down on hoping that this playing the saxophone is cool. So
is it gonna do it for you? And it's just something about him with those black shades on, just going at it on the tenor sax. It's like, what's happening? Am I taking crazy pills?
I'm just one of you hip kids too, playing the saxophone just like you kids.
Tenor sax huge in 93, thanks to Clinton. That's not true, but it may have been. Maybe there's probably at least a few people out there who are like, I started playing the sax because of Bill Clinton. But it's just a funny moment in time, considering what politics are and what they have devolved into. It's a sweeter time, like Clinton or not, to look back and be like, a candidate rested his hat on fucking playing the saxophone. That was his gimmick. It just made me giggle all week thinking about it. So that's my thing, Clinton and a saxophone.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Ren. No, I like that. It is funny to remember that. I mean, it's just, like I said, it's just, I think it was, again, like, just the whole, he played the saxophone. It's not like he picked up a skill to be cool and make it his thing. But, yeah, it was just kind of like, hey, listen, this is a different approach, but we're going to try it, is basically like me trying to be like, look at me. I'm just kind of every, just like you guys.
I'm Joe Billiam. I'm Joe Billiam. I personally will vote for anyone who's like, I have a good economic policy, free healthcare for all. Also, check out this cool magic trick. I'd be like, yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Do the magic. If they could do some freaking Job level. Level fucking magic.
Just get someone stuck in the disappear box.
All right. Oh. So I wanted to talk about, I haven't talked about a video game in a hot minute. So I was thinking, because it's one of these things where sometimes like I have to just look through video games like that were on systems to even remember. Because the thing is again, like we didn't have a Blockbuster in town, but we had two video stores in Monticello that were, had a ton of video games and always, you know, had stuff available. Of course, I shouldn't say that, because anytime like a new big game would come out, like a GoldenEye or, you know, Mario Kart, things like that, they'd be out for weeks at a time and you just couldn't get it. Like, it was just like, why do you have one copy of this goddamn game? This is ridiculous. Why
not? Can I pause you before you go on?
Sure.
I'm really interested in knowing the names of the two non-Blockbuster movie stores in town. Like the small regional or like just local ones always make me smile.
Sunny,
what was it called?
Sunnycrest Video. Aww. And Monticello Video, which was less creative, but still it was good.
Applicable.
Yeah. It was kind of Monticello. Monticello Video was a little bit more, it wasn't sketchy, but it was just like a little bit lower quality. And then Sunnycrest was kind of the nicer one that, like, you know, high schoolers worked at.
Sunnycrest sounds fancy, so yeah.
So I was looking through games because we rented so many video games, because you're not going to buy every, I mean, like we played so many games that I probably only played for like 2 days, but it felt like I played them forever. But this one, I know for a fact that between myself and my friends, we rented this many, many times. Because for whatever reason, it was just like a really fun game. Like, and even now I'm like, this would still be a fun game. And that is Looney Tunes Basketball. For the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
So if you know this game, you'll know what I'm talking about. If not, let me just kind of give you a quick rundown for those of you who might not be familiar with this game in particular. Think about NBA Jam with Looney Tunes.
Is this just Space Jam, the video game?
No, it's funny because, yeah, I mean, it's a completely different thing because it's not even related to Space Jam at all. It's just, hey, we got some Looney Tunes.
Okay,
and they're in this game. So it was a really cool game because it was a two-on-two setup where you'd play you know, either two people on the same team or, you know, I'd play on one team and then my friend would play on another team. Or you can just play against, you know, you and a computer against two other computers. The cool thing about this was it was literally like a step up from NBA Jam even, because they added extra stuff. I mean, if you just wanted actual basketball with real basketball players, that's fine. But the different characters you could choose from would have different stats. And, you know, they wouldn't just be straight up better than other ones. So you wouldn't ever get a situation where it's like, oh, I'm playing with the Bulls, so my team's just better, you know. So there's, let me see, the list of characters that were available. There was Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Tasmanian Devil, Elmer Fudd, Marvin the Martian, Sylvester, Wile E. Coyote, and Yosemite Sam. So here's the thing. So the way that the game works is, in addition to just playing like a game of 2-on-2 basketball, very much like NBA Blitz and having NBA Jam, sorry. Mm-hmm. And having very similar like over the top moves, like huge slam dunks and like long shots and everything like that. They also had like just during the game, like random like little gems would drop, just like appear different places, and that was worth money. Okay. Like 10 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents, etc. And so during the game, you could literally buy these different power-ups and stuff that would help you. So like each character had its own signature, like long bomb three-pointer. Like mm-hmm. the one I remember specifically was Elmer Fudd's, which was
no
that
way.
It's and this is basically you buy this power-up and then you basically just shoot it from half. So from it, you have to be behind half court, so it's got to be a really far shot. He just throws it up in the air and then shoots it with his shotgun and it goes flying into the hoop. You can get like a force field around you so that way people can't hurt you. Or this one is kind of stupid, but like you'd buy them still just because they were, you know, kind of fun. Cream pies that you'd throw at your opponents. So that would, you know, stick to their face and then they couldn't do anything for a second. So just various different things you do. But I think like the big thing is the power-ups that you specifically got with each character were fun because some of them were, you know, cooler and more fun than others. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I remember there being another thing where you could get something that would like that was character specific that would like hurt other people, not more than just that 3-point shot. So I just remember it was so much fun because it was just like, it wasn't because I'm like, oh man, I love Looney Tunes so much. It was literally just that I'm like, this game is just good. It's like NBA Jam, but also with a little bit of an extra twist to it. And of course, I love NBA Jam, so of course I was all about it. So we would rent this thing a lot to play and play as different characters. And of course, I think I was usually like Taz or Marvin the Martian because... reasons.
Why not?
I like
for
them
reasons.
The most.
So what I find interesting here is that this game appears to have come out in 95 and Space Jam mm-hmm. came out the following year. So this preceded Space Jam, which
Space
is
Jam.
So interesting because it seems to me like this would have happened afterwards. So I wonder if this was any kind of like push to make mm-hmm. Space Jam, like because of this game.
Yeah, because it looks like this was even in February of 95. So it was like mm-hmm. the beginning of the year too. So I mean, it was probably being made in 94. But I mean, this game wasn't like a huge game where they dropped like a ton of money on it. But I mean, as far mm-hmm. as like rankings and everything, like it got, you know, 80-90%, you know, approval rating from all these different places and stuff. So, I mean, it was viewed as a fun game. It just wasn't something where it's like, this is world breaking new technology, because it wasn't. It was just, this is NBA Jam with a few other things. And hey, look, Looney Tunes characters. But yeah.
Elmer Fudd. Artwork is actually pretty good. This holds up.
It's nice because like Looney Tunes are such basic characters. Like the art on this looks pretty good, you know, because you're mm-hmm. playing as the characters, like 2D characters. It's way easier to do good illustrations on this rather than trying to do fucking like polygon like characters or something like that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring that up because I love this game and I think it's rad. There's always like cool games like this that I haven't thought of in a really long time that are. Like I said, not like gangbusters went crazy and blew up the scene or anything like that, but uh-huh. still were just very fun to play. So Looney Tunes basketball, the end.
Looney Tunes basketball again came before Space Jam. Very curious about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm wondering if it's like, did they have the ideas for Space Jam and they're like, hey, let's just throw this out there, or if it was like, yeah, like you said, I mean, it could be like, man, people like Looney Tunes playing basketball.
I never heard of this game before today, but it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Shit, I wish I had a Sega Genesis. I mean, Super Nintendo, my bad, Super Nintendo. I also wish I had a Genesis so that I could play it exactly 40 minutes and then never touch it again. Yeah. That's my goal. So, well, how about this? How about we take a break? We've covered our things. We'll take a break. We'll come back with some poll results from last week and then get into our court case.
I said no, though.
You said no. Okay. Yeah. Well, then, no.
Okay, we'll do it.
We'll do it? Okay. I didn't think I'd have to elbow jog you too hard on that one. So.
I thought after you ignored me the first time, you would just keep ignoring me, which I kind of liked. So, just get to the break. So.
Awesome. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back and see you in a second.
Goodbye, kids.
Hey, 90s Court listeners, Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90SCOURT. Sweet dreams.
Welcome back from the break. Hopefully by now you've listened to the Sleep Phones out enough that you're like, I got to get some of those. And hopefully you did, because I'm sleeping like crap lately and I need to put mine back on.
I kind of mix it up too, because I usually like I have the fan that's kind of like my go-to, like whenever I run out, like I'm like, I think I'll switch back to that. Otherwise, normally I have, let me see, because I've got a couple apps. One of them is Rainfall. And it, one of them is Heavy Rain, which just every time I literally, when I close my eyes, I feel like I'm laying like out on a porch somewhere and like there's rain coming out there, but it's not falling on me. And it's just kind of like transports you in a different place the way that the audio goes into your ears. So that's just my quick review on them, as they are
sleeping,
very relaxing and very cool.
Yes, so they've been very helpful, but suddenly they cannot cut through all the anxiety that every single place that you turn in this world is giving me. So
I will say this, they have been very successful at the thing that I mainly wanted them for, which is I have a lot of trucks and vehicles that like to get her done quite loudly at 10:30 or 6 a.m. Literally, like, as long as it's like right on my ear, right on there, it blots it out. So
all right then, thank you, Sleep Phones.
Suck it, get her done, trucks.
Suck it, get her done, trucks. So last week,
I should probably tell you guys about that.
Everyone's waiting with bated
breath. Here's the thing, is it was the fact that it was like it was so close that I just like I was so, you know, whenever like there's almost an upset in a college basketball game, you're like, holy shit, our team's not rated, we're garbage, but we're about to beat like Duke or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you're so close, but then the other team still wins. That was this week, basically.
That was this week.
So poll results, Cool Runnings versus League of Their Own. Instagram got us started with the first results, which was 50-50.
Oof.
As it should be.
Yes.
And it seemed to be going that way on the other. There was a period of time when all of them were 50-50. Like, I remember looking and seeing that. However, it did not shake out that way. Twitter, 50.8% to 49.2%, a League of Their Own. And Facebook, 52.5% to 47.5%, a League of Their Own.
Man, this is rough.
So
this is the tightest we've ever had for a poll.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, like, especially since we have all three now versus just two that we used to use. Whew. Having that 50-50 plus, I mean, the 50.8 to 49.2 had to just be one vote, you know?
Yeah. That was one person, probably
and Facebook,
my sister.
Was maybe three or four votes or something like that. But
yeah.
No, here's the thing. And for listeners that know, like, sometimes we know it's going to not be close and it's fine. Like whenever it's like pretty far away, but it just, the two made sense together. But like, it makes us so happy when they're close. Like, that's what we want, is we want you tortured and in pain. That's just like our main goal on this show. So
true that.
Yeah. So, and anyways, another thing that we love giving pain to you for is children's shows that even though you think they're really cool, they're actually not.
Ba-dum-bum. agonizingly long, like this case. Yes. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. So it may not be so bad.
This week, as we discussed, we're covering a couple of children's programs, especially like, I mean, they're well loved. It's just one of those things where like, it's kind of like for me, like Hook, where like going back and watching it, I was like, ooh, I remember that much more fondly in the past. this was The Magic School Bus versus Wishbone.
Yes.
And I'll be going first, and I'll be representing a little known show that goes like this. Okay, that's it.
Can I be honest? I've never heard that theme song before.
What?
I know. I'm a trash can.
I'm Lisa's a garbage can person.
It's true. Regardless of my knowledge of the Magic School Bus, I'm a trash can person.
Yeah.
And deal with it. Just
really every time she mentions something like that, it's just like throw something else on the pile. Just it's not that she wasn't already a garbage can. It's just throw more garbage in the pile.
I often in my household I'm known as Queen of Garbage Mountain, and this show just drives it home.
People are queens of anything, so you know. True. So they can suck it. That's Magic true. School Bus. I will say this. From watching it, I was like, holy shit, this show is like genuinely educational. Like, it is one of the more educational shows that I've seen. And it's an interesting educational because most of the time, most shows, like, you know, to have a cartoon that's supposed to be entertaining for kids and everything like that that also has that much level of education, like to the point where they commit so much to it that it's not like, hey, we're going to compromise the actual information for entertainment. You know, we're not going to just cut it down where there's like nothing in certain episodes because we really want this one to be funny. No.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was interested, especially science stuff. That's cool because that's like what almost all of this was science stuff versus like, you know, I mean, there'll be like kids, super kiddie shows where they teach about like letters and numbers and stuff like that, but this is one of the few ones that's like, this is for people maybe a little bit older, like, you know, from like 7 to 10 range and stuff, that maybe you're learning a little bit higher level stuff. So
okay,
this show aired 1994 to 1997.
Okay,
13
another shorter run. Okay,
yeah, 13 episodes per season, so again, four years for a show is still pretty good. I mean, especially for the 90s, like that was a pretty good run.
Yeah.
But obviously since then it has come back and there have been other things, and I know there's supposed to be a movie that's coming out with Elizabeth Banks or something like that. So there's a bunch of other stuff that's going to be coming down the pipe because it is just such a loved thing. And Ms. Frizzle is like one of the most loved characters in like any series of anything.
Yes. Anyone who is a teacher aspires to also dress like Ms. Frizzle.
Like I had a teacher, Ms. Appleby, when I was in school, and
that's a great name.
She was totally Miss Frizzle. Like, she was like just so cool and down to earth and everything like that. And she always had us doing like really cool projects in class that actually made it entertaining, at least for me. Other people who didn't give a shit probably didn't like it, but I loved it. So yeah, she was very much a Miss Frizzle type of person, and even kind of talked like her. So. This show was based on the books written by Joanna Cole and illustrated by Bruce Deegan. I always mention illustrations because in these kind of books, like for kids' books, like illustrations is pretty important, right? Like it's not just like we're talking about like Where's Waldo or something like that. Like if we talked about just the writer and not the illustrator, that would be insane.
Yes.
Or even That's I Spy, true. Where they had like the photographer as one of them, and then the other one was the
Don't
writer.
Don't get
and, like,
me started on that shit again, Andy. Yeah. Don't get me started on that
the
again.
The I Spy, all the person wrote was just like I Spy and then just listed some things. And they're like, I get a writer's credit on this.
Yes. Fucking I Spy. You want to hear me go off? Go listen to the I Spy versus Where's Waldo episode. I forgot how much I hate it. It just comes up like an old
It's so weird
like,
how that happens. The massive power company, Scholastic Books, as we know, was like, listen up, nerds. We need books that are going to be great. So they did it. So the two people, Joanna and Bruce, were like, fuck, yeah, I guess we'll make some books. And so they were like, hey, what about a school bus that's magical? And they were like, all right.
Into it.
And so they did it.
And so they did it.
But we're here to talk about television because books are hard. So let's talk about the characters real quick. I'll keep this shorter than you'd probably expect. Lily Tomlin played the one and only Miss Frizzle, who, I will say this, weirdly, Miss Frizzle is single, because I think she's got some sweet vibes going on.
She's got great style. Her hair is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
She's
like
a teacher.
That personality like that, holy shit. Like, she has a magic bus that can do fucking everything. Like, I'd be like, yes, please, let's see where we can go.
Yes, let's go to
I'm not gonna say anything
medieval times.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Let's say that instead.
Let's say that instead, yeah.
Arnold, who is one of the kids, played by Amos Crawley in season one, who you've never heard of, and played by Danny Tamborelli in seasons two through four.
Okay.
Which, for those of you who are not familiar, that is Little Pete from Pete and Pete, as well as he was on All That for several years as well.
Yeah, he was.
So, then the school bus is the next character I'd like to talk about. Yes,
the school. He gets his own character. Okay.
Yeah, it's primarily used as shrinking and enlarging in most episodes. Obviously, it also flies. It's indestructible to all substances. Like, you see it like, oh, I'm just floating on lava now. Oh, I'm in stomach acid. Like, oh, I'm being crushed by a dinosaur. Like, it doesn't really matter because it's just like, hey, I'm a magic van or a magic school bus, I guess. It's literally in the name. It basically can just turn into whatever shit they happen to need at the given moment, which is why I'm really shocked that the Magic School Bus is not in the MCU.
Yes.
It's Marvel Cinematic Universe, for those of you who are unaware.
I did not know. Did you see her good effect?
I did hear you do that. I've done it before on this show, so don't feel bad.
Awesome.
Because I'm just like rolling with it, and then I'm like, so, but
MCU,
I was.
MCU, for sure. What college is that again?
Yeah. Michigan Central University.
I would have been like, you're absolutely right. I know people who went there.
Yeah. And then, let's see. And then Miss Frizzle's lizard that's just there most of the time and sometimes appears to be sentient. Like, some episodes, he absolutely is. It's one of those things where they're just like, it's kind of like Stewie in various episodes, like in various things where certain people can hear him sometimes. Okay. And other times they can't. Oh. Like, sometimes he's randomly sentient. Other times he's just a fucking lizard. So,
interesting.
And then there were a bunch of other kids.
There.
And you want to know why I said that? Because they were played by people, sure, but, like, I just don't care about the other kids. Like, Arnold was, like, the only character of the kids that had, like, any personality whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you a little bit about how the personalities, the non-Arnold kids, what they consisted of.
Okay.
Basically, they had three voices that they did. Like, no matter which character they were not different in any way. They're like, here's a slightly innocuous statement. I'm just kind of saying it like this. And then now I'm saying it a little bit faster and a little bit more excited, so things are dangerous or whack. And then lower and a bit whiny when I'm embarrassed or upset about something. And that's basically the extent of their entire character. Sometimes they'll make jokes, but it's like, it's interchangeable. It's not like, oh, this guy's the jokester and this person's the prude or anything like that. Just like, no, they're just, there's Arnold, who's the nerd that everybody shits on all the time, and then everybody else. So he didn't really shit on him. He's just always the one who messes up and does dumb shit.
Arnold looks like Frizzle.
I feel really like there might be some secret baby daddy stuff going on, but like, we just don't know about who his dad is.
We don't need to know.
We don't need
it's
to know.
It's not what this is about.
You know what? I'm going to make it about that.
I'm going to hijack your court case and make it about this weird child.
Let me talk about fucking Arnold and his dad, who is dead in the ocean. I watched a few episodes. Those included several where I kind of tried to mix it up. So I kind of like, I got the first one. I saw it and I was like, I can't believe how crazy this episode is. So the first one involved, evidently they needed to give the principal a baby chick or something.
Sure.
It was very unclear on why. They just started the episode and they're like, let me explain why we didn't have the baby chick. And
what?
Yeah, I know. And we're like, oh, let's just really hopping right in there to a concept that none of us know what's going on. So basically, they went to the farm with the Friz, who is basically the local witch who subsides exclusively off the fear of children who have to acknowledge their own mortality, like, every day at school. Because Miss Frizzle basically puts children in constant danger.
She's awesome.
Like
street smarts.
Like on the verge of death constantly. Like there are so many times those kids should be fucking dead. and like at the beginning, Arnold's like, "Man, I hope I don't have to go on another thing where I have to, you know, debate if I'm gonna live, and then you know go cry again because I'm so broken inside." Mm-hmm. And the other kid's like, "Oh, fuck off, Arnold. We're already broken inside. We love this."
We love this.
So the first time I watched again. So they end up going down like some chickens, fallopian tubes, or whatever the fuck they have, like that equivalent.
Normal stuff.
I mean, they even said it out loud. So, which I mean,
they said chickens, fallopian tubes.
I don't think they said those words, but it was something that was like clearly the terminology I could tell had to do with the reproductive organs of a female chicken.
Wow.
Because they were trying to, they're like, we have to get this fucking chick. So to make a chicken, they did say like some other things in the episode. Like at one point they were like, to make a chicken, the eggs have to have two parts, one from the hen and one from the male. Which is the most interesting way of telling the truth, but also not saying semen.
Yes.
Or whatever the fuck chickens have.
I think they just run into each other. I don't think there's any actual sex. I think it's just chickens
have cloacas, so I don't think that they even, like, there's not, like, you know, a D and a V going on. I think it's just two.
By the way, cloaca is my favorite word.
It's just, it sounds good.
Yeah.
And it feels good, because when you say it, you also feel smart for knowing that word.
It's true. A bird flew into my head at Disney World in high school, and I started screaming that a bird's cloaca. I was like, this bird just hit me in the head with this cloaca. And then everyone was like, I hate children. I was like, you're welcome.
That's fine. It's true. Yeah. So basically they're just straight up talking about fucking.
Of course.
They call it parts because it's better than saying chicken semen.
What are we doing?
So listen, they're talking about different eggs and how some are fertilized and some are not. And they're like, how do we tell? And they're like, well, this one has an egg in it. And then, you know, it gets fertilized. And then we go through the process. And so they get one fertilized. And so Arnold gets shrunk down into a fucking chicken suit. And he just lives inside the egg with this, like, growing chicken to make sure that it gets done. I don't remember what the purpose of that was, but evidently it was supposed to be, he's supposed to be helping in some way. I don't know.
That sounds like some kind of like Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
Disaster scene.
This is a fucking Are You Afraid of the Dark thing of just like shrinking a fucking kid and putting him in a chicken egg. And you're like, you need to fucking hatch this motherfucker. So he does it.
Oh man.
And he's honestly, he's in there for several days, which I mean, I don't know how air gets in to an egg.
Also, where's the child's mother, Frizzle?
Yeah, I know. It was several days that they were just hanging out of this chicken with Arnold in it, and they just kept, like, the police kept calling, and they're like, no, guys, don't worry. He should turn up any minute.
He's in an egg. we shrunk him into a chicken's egg. This is totally fine. Don't worry about it. He'll be back Thursday afternoon. It's fine.
So finally, they get the egg. It hatches, and they let him go back to normal size, where he finally cries. Goes and sees his parents. They were like, wow, we thought you were dead. We had your funeral planned and everything. But we're so glad you're not dead. So that was the end of that episode.
Wow.
And then at the end of each episode, I'll say this, is they'll have a little thing where they'll, at the end, have like a question and answer thing where all of a sudden it'll be like, questions for the producers. Again, I don't know who's asking these questions.
No one.
Like, there's no one, because you can't watch the episode and then respond with questions. So like they'll have these questions that somebody will read, and then the producer, which is still in cartoon mode, will like answer the question about the episode or something.
It's questions the producer wanted to ask himself. He just wanted an excuse to talk.
Yeah.
In cartoon mode.
I'm guessing it was there was no natural or normal way to bring that fact up in the episode. So
that makes more sense.
So they were just like, let's just bring this up at the end as clarification. So I ended up watching a total of two episodes where they went inside of Arnold. When I started the second one, I was like, I've already seen what I had to see here. Okay, I don't need to see inside of Arnold again. So evidently in the one that I did watch, which was the first one, Arnold was at a award ceremony, like with a bunch of adults that were very adult, and then him randomly, where he was supposed to be accepting an award of some kind from like a rock club, And when I say a rock club, I don't mean like, man, rad music. It's a club about like rocks and geodes and stuff.
That's...
Which, I mean, is a good club, if you ask me.
I guess. I mean, I guess there are worse clubs.
Yeah.
There are a lot of worse clubs, oh, I guess.
Oh, yes, there are. Anyways, the motherfucker is orange, like in this episode. And people are like, hey, you're like orange as fuck. And he's like, oh, no, this is my big day for award ceremony. If only I'd noticed this before the second I walked in and you guys pointed it out. So this entire time, it's like, it's so obvious to the audience. He's just eating these fucking, like, seaweedies. It's what they're called, seaweedies. Like, that's clearly, he's eating this food constantly, and he keeps saying the name of it the entire episode and pointing out the fact that he loves them so much, and he keeps eating them, and that's, like, all he eats. And yet they're like, what could possibly be causing him to be orange? Oh, and so they go inside of it, and then they're like, oh, wait, that's right. Seaweedies also have a fuckload of carrots in them. So they kind of go into cells and show how, like, how cells regenerate and all that stuff. So, again, there was science in there when they're going inside of him and doing weird shit. And then, like, at the last second, he's about to go up and accept his award. And he's like, everybody's going to fucking laugh at me because I'm literally orange as hell. And he's walking up and he's, like, halfway up there. And they're like, we've got to do something. So they drive the magic school bus and it magically turns into, like, a suction machine that ends up cleaning every single cell, its orangeness. And just as he comes up, he looks completely normal and he's bracing for impact. And then he's like, oh, wait, I'm not orange anymore. Yay. Thanks for this rock award. I love you. Bye.
This is so weird. What's wrong with this show?
Thank you for the rock award.
I love my rock award.
His rock award was literally like a geode on a stand.
I would like that award.
Yeah.
I would take that award.
I will say this. When I was a kid, I loved geodes. Those were pretty rad. So.
Yeah.
Who am I kidding? I still think geodes are rad.
I mean, yeah, most adults do now. Yeah. People, yeah, they anything that isn't despair, shiny, they're into it.
So. they are in undespair, so that's good.
Yes.
Okay. So then there's a couple other ones I watched, but I'm going to kind of just focus on one. So there's a couple other ones, one where they went into the ocean and these two kids were trying to figure out the connection between sea scum and tuna fish. I'm not even going to go into details why, because it's insane.
Yes.
So I just assumed the entire time that, like, it was understood that a tuna fish sandwich had tuna fish in it, that they knew that. But evidently, they just kept calling it a tuna sandwich. And so, like, halfway through the episode, or, like, two-thirds through, they're like, wait a minute, what's inside a tuna sandwich? And they're like, oh, mayonnaise, eggs, tuna fish, salt. And they're like, that's it, eureka, tuna fish.
What?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, they eat plankton that are in sea scum or something like that. Like, it's the weirdest connection. Basically, they're in the sea and getting eaten by fucking fish and shit for no reason. Like, hey, we're going to get real small so that way a fish can eat us for no reason. But then we'll just YOLO out of there because fuck the fish.
Right. Hashtag fuck the fish.
So anyways, so apparently, I forget, again, this is for like super young kids, so it's... fair, maybe there are people in this world that hear tuna fish, tuna sandwich, and aren't like, hey, there's fish in that.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so the last one was motherfucking dinosaurs. Of course, I had to say this for last. So, again, not exactly Jurassic Park level. Lots of pink and yellows in the mix of these dinos.
Sure.
They start natural. They're at a dig where they've been on vacation originally. And so after that, then they're like, man, I wonder where that dinosaur came from. And they had this fossilized egg as well. And so Miss Frizzle's like, well, that's what you get for asking casual rhetorical questions. And then she's like, I'm going to reverse time 65 billion years. And she does, because that's also a capability that the magic school bus has.
It's an amazing bus. It's a Volkswagen.
It's a rad bus. It's a Volkswagen bus. That's probably accurate.
Probably.
So, man, do these kids almost die a lot. there were just so many different dinosaurs that were just so fucking dangerous, like, for various different reasons. At the end, the entire school bus is inside the jaws of a T-Rex in the bus, and they couldn't escape. And Miss Frizzle's like, I got this, motherfucker. I'm going to make one of our children, Arnold, really big and have him fight the T-Rex.
Okay, if I may, at the exact moment that you began talking about the T-Rex and the school bus, I landed on the image of the T-Rex with the school bus in his mouth, and Arnold was the size of the T-Rex. I was like, what the fuck is happening? And then you explained it.
Oh,
like,
my gosh, that's like, great.
That's just a really small baby T-Rex that Arnold's about to fight, but just kidding.
Yeah, they make him real big, and then Arnold is literally just like, hey, T-Rex, hey, short arms, I'm going to fuck you up.
I'm going to beat your ass.
And he does some weird limp-wristed karate moves, and apparently that was enough to get the T-Rex to leave.
It would freak me out.
Yeah, limp-wristed karate moves? Hell yeah. I'd be like, oh, no, he's going to slap me.
He's going to backslap me.
Yeah, so, I mean, apparently, like, the whole thing was, like, they're weirdly, like, trying to be sensitive to dinosaurs. Like, you know, even the meat eaters weren't trying to be dicks about it. And you're like, why are we defending dinosaurs here? Like, nobody fucking cares. Why are we so focused on, like, maybe, like, dinosaurs weren't just going to murder everybody? Like,
yeah,
we don't... It doesn't matter. What does it matter? Like, they're not here.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Anyways. So, anyways, I'll say this. It's funny to write about the episodes of the Magic School Bus. For me, it was a rough watch. Just because, like I said, is the jokes weren't funny.
Oh, is that so?
And yeah, and the stories, like the storyline, like I get it. Like we're like, okay, we get it. They can go in those places. I remember as a kid being blown away by this ship because, like, I always remembered specifically. It was actually the second episode I was gonna watch that where they went inside Arnold. Don't
make
it weird.
It's just a weird thing to hear someone
say.
It
is a weird thing to say. Yes.
The second episode where they went inside Arnold.
They're doing it all kinds of times. Don't front. So, yeah, so the other one I was going to watch is where he was sick and they went inside and they learned about, like, antibodies and white blood cells and red blood cells and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I think because that was one that, like, they showed in, like, a school, like, a class or something like that at some point. And so, like, that's always the one that stuck with me the most.
Yeah.
Because I learned a lot about red blood cells and white blood cells and their various purposes and stuff. But, yeah, so it's a super cool show, especially for kids. I think it'd still be a good watch for them. And, again, it's genuinely educational. I will say the episode on, like, the chicken thing, I was like, man, like, I just learned more about human, like, about procreation in, like, 5 minutes than I learned from, like, my entire middle school career. Which is more of a comment on public education and the fact that they're terrible.
Yes. So, yes, absolutely.
So anyways, Magic School Bus, it's rad. Miss Frizzle's hot, and I like her a lot. And I'm looking forward to the new versions of it and checking it out.
Well, I'll be damned.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be damned. That's imagine for someone who is so concerned about not having all your notes together, you sure did come through.
No, I thought at the end, I was like, you know what? I feel very good about that, given the fact that I was panicking like an hour before the show to get my notes written down.
And here I am looking at my notes being like, I've been ready for a couple of days. Bitch, no, you weren't. Your notes suck. Listen, if you like when I go on a tear on something and try to remain unbiased, but ultimately just end up like shitting on my defendant in court, then boy, have I got a case for you today.
Boy, have I got a case for you.
Today I'm defending with heavy quotes, Wishbone. Not because I liked it, but because I didn't like it. That's why I chose it. Because I was like, you know what? I never liked Wishbone, and I'm not going to start liking it now. So I'm going to go ahead and cover it and just shit on it for 10 minutes. How's that sound? Does it sound good? Sounds good to me. So it came out when I was 10. So there's a good chance I was already erring on the side of, like, way too old for this shit. But also, I deeply disliked it for a myriad of reasons. For one, it is live action. And let's be honest, if you weren't a cartoon, you could fuck right off to me when I was 10. Plain and simple. It's about literature. And let's be honest, if you weren't about a cat and a dog fighting Spumcoast style, you could fuck right off to me.
Lisa, I'm going to need you to slow down for a second. This is going to be an embarrassing statement. I just pulled it up and I'm looking at it right now.
What's up?
I forgot Wishbone was a live action show.
Yes. Yeah, Andy.
I just pulled it up and I'm like, yep, that's a dog.
That's not a
cartoon.
That is an actual dog person. Oh, also it was filmed in Texas. And let's be honest, Texas sucks. I live there. I know. Born and raised. Yeah. This place sucks. All right. Yeah. Also, it had the E/I stamp of approval, which meant it was educational / informational. And no, thank you. Inspirational. I prefer to get dumber from TV, not smarter. Thank you. No, thank you. So let's do some background before I keep shitting on this case, okay? Wishbone started in 1995 and ran until 97 on PBS. So PS, that's another strike. If you had access to Nickelodeon, what are the chances you were willfully going to watch anything on PBS on purpose? Like, if anything was on, if anything was on Nickelodeon, if it wasn't just like the hour-long commercial party that they would throw sometimes, which is not something that happened, why were you on PBS?
Yeah. I mean,
let's be honest. If you had Nickelodeon, what were you doing on PBS?
I mean, Magic School Bus was on PBS.
Okay, well, but you got it to go inside Arnold, which nobody wanted to go inside Arnold whenever you could just go over to Nickelodeon and watch Tommy and Chucky. Like, I would have rather just watched Tommy and Chucky for like two days.
Can we not make the going inside Arnold thing a thing?
Absolutely not. I'm making it a thing more than you've ever wanted me to not make something a thing. So the show was filmed in Plano, Allen, and Grapevine, Texas, which are all pretty shitty places in the 90s and now. Sorry, not sorry. They're actually just kind of like richer areas in Texas. They're fine. I know people who live in all areas. Plano is kind of like the rich kid town, but I'm sure in the 90s that place sucked. But the whole concept of Wishbone was that a fucking Jack Russell Terrier dog, a la Look Who's Talking style, would narrate this live action show with other kids and adults. You lost me a long time ago whenever you had Jack Russell Terrier. Nope, peace out. Now, Look Who's Talking style, I'm a little into, but then it was live action with children and adults. No, thank you. No, thank
you. It feels like they could have made this a cartoon so easy, and it would have been so much easier, but they're just like, no, let's get this fucker dressed up in costumes.
Absolutely. And it sucked. I'm going to go ahead and be honest on the front end. I tried watching a few episodes. I couldn't. No amount of wine, no amount of nothing could make the shows worth watching. I even put it on for my kids today, and they were like, this isn't for children. And I was like, you're right. It's not for children.
This is not for human consumption.
This isn't fit for human consumption. You're right, children. Wishbone is not fit for human consumption.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just looking at the ratings right now, and holy shit, like 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb.
Okay.
8.9 out of 10 on TV.com. Like, what?
You know who's rating this show? Librarians.
I love books.
I love books and it's so educational. I look back on Wishbone so fondly. Fucking do you?
Accelerated do you? Reader.
So, all right, let's get back to the show a little bit. Wishbone lived with his owner, Joe Talbot, who was a teenager in it's a fake city called Oakdale, Texas, which I'm pretty sure is real anyway because the state is huge, but I digress.
Did his kid have any parental guardians?
He had one mother. Why did you say it like that? I don't know.
Why did you specify that? That's such a weird thing to specify.
I don't know, but I cracked myself up a little too much. I'll get to it. I know why I said that, and I'll get to it. Give me a second.
Lisa is fucking imploding right now.
I'm dying. I'm having the time of my life shitting on Wishbone. Thank you, Preston. So the reason I say, okay, let me just go ahead and skip to it. The reason I say he had one mother is that the characters on the show included Joe Talbot, which is his owner, Ellen Talbot, which is Joe's widowed mother. Oof. She's a fucking widow on the show.
Dead parents all the
time.
Dead
parents. So that's why he said he has one mother.
The other ones are all dead too.
Everyone's dead. Back to the show. Wishbone would daydream about being the main character from a classic literature story, which is like, okay, cool, super cool, you're a cool dog. When Wishbone was in these daydreams, the characters in his weird literary hallucinations would see him as the character he was playing, not a dog.
Like, what the fuck is a dog doing in here? Like, every time.
But they would never see him as a dog. They'd be like, William Shakespeare.
If they did that instead, though, every episode, that would be amazing. They're just like, what the fuck, a dog?
A dog? Like, why is this?
That was the end of the episode.
And that's it. I'd be like, I would totally watch that show if it ended and then be like, what the fuck is this dog doing here? And then it was just over. You'd have me at that show. Oh my gosh. So basically it's live action literature class with a dog and nobody was there for it. Except for some people were there for it because it definitely got 4 daytime Emmys, a Peabody Award, and some honors from the Television Critics Association. So some people were like, man, this is great. It's so educational. And everyone else was like, wah, wah. I don't know. Preston, listen, if you loved Wishbone, I am so sorry. I want to hear from you if you really loved Wishbone because I want to know what the draw was. Because I do not see it at all. So a run-of-the-mill episode of Wishbone would start with like an opening scene laying out whatever debacle Wishbone's family was currently going through, like planting trees or donating food or needing help with schoolwork or dealing with the consequences of only having one mother and no father, so-and-so. Whatever noble thing someone in the family was going through would remind Wishbone, reminder, a dog, about a famous story from literature.
Book that I read.
This book I read. Oh, I remember A Tale of Two Cities. Let's talk about
this
that.
This dog
has read
so many fucking books, and these kids, I bet, haven't read shit, so.
Yeah, it's insane. So he would have, like, this daydream about a literary story and then begin cosplaying the lead role in his mind. Like, where the fuck did you get this dog? Can we listen, all things aside, let's take a step back. How did this show come to exist? What happened? Who hurt you?
Somebody just loved dressing their dog up in outfits, and they were like, what if... Man, he just looks just like William Shakespeare. And then they started acting scenes with him.
I guess
he wasn't totally weird about it. So, like, let's just make a TV show about this.
I guess. And in the episode, he would bounce back and forth showing similarities between Wishbone's family, like his family's current obstacle in the book. And so real quick, like I was saying, some of the people in the show, Joe Talbot, his owner, his best friend and neighbor, David Barnes, another neighbor and friend, Samantha Sam Kepler, of course, his widow mom, Wanda Gilmore, an eccentric neighbor and owner of the Oakdale Chronicle newspaper and president of the local historical society. Can we just... It's so boring.
Does everybody... I mean, does Wishbone talk in real life or just in his dreams?
Just in his dreams. He'll be talking to himself in real life, but I believe in his dreams he's talking to... Yeah, I think
gotcha.
There's
so
this...
So
yeah.
In real life, he's more like Homeward Bound style. In his dreams, yes. He's like actually a person.
Well, at least I think he is. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. I tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, this show doesn't even matter. So, okay. Wishbone was voiced by someone named Larry Brantley, who described getting the job for the voiceover as this... The weirdest audition I think that's ever been or ever will be was this one. I didn't know what the dog looked like, and they gave me the barest of information. I never really read from the script. I was supposed to, but didn't. The producer said, watch the dog and just kind of like follow along and see what he's doing right now. So Soccer, the name of the dog, was just ignoring us and obsessing over this tennis ball. He was just staring at this tennis ball. So it was like 5 minutes about... a tennis ball, and I walked out. So I just did 5 minutes about a tennis ball, and I walked out of the audition saying, I can't believe I just did 5 minutes about a tennis ball, and then I got the job. We may never understand. So even he's kind of like, what's happening? Dallas was a weird time in the 90s. Ugh, just weird. And so I'm not sure how effective this show was in actually getting the producers what they wanted, which was to like children to form a hunger for great literary works of art. Like, I'm pretty sure if any children were reading books in the 90s, it fucking wasn't The Great Gatsby. It was more like Animorphs. I'm a preteen guinea pig.
I was going to say, these kids, like, this is some pretty high level reading for these fucking kids.
Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine being like 6 or 7 years old and being like, yes, Wuthering Heights, or I don't know, it's just some other fucking shit like that. And I don't know. I guess all in all, the show wasn't awful if you A, liked dogs. I don't. B, liked ultralight chuckles. Or C, didn't have cable and maybe didn't have friends, or perhaps your mother was a librarian. That's probably how you liked the show. Jesus. In the end, the show only had 4 of its 50 episodes released to DVD as of 2019, which means nobody cares. So
I'm sorry. 4 episodes
have been moved to DVD. Only 4.
Right. Like, 4. What DVD only has 4 things on it, anyways?
It's called The Little Dog with a Big Imagination, which only includes the 4 previously released episodes.
That's like season 1, part like 6 of. Like season 1, part 6,
it's nothing
out of a whole season. Like, that's not very much.
And like, I want to, like, really, at the end of the day, the concept seems fantastic. You want children to have an appreciation and understanding and background with these stories, because whether or not they like it, they're going to learn it before they graduate high school. They're going to read these books. They're going to do these things. They're going to continue on into college if they do and read about these stories there. And so it just makes sense to kind of have, and also just some kind of basic regard for classic literature. However, nobody likes it. And that's Wishbone. So if you one thing I did want to say, I will applaud the show for doing it Lisa style, which is to say, apparently they did not soft pedal any of the like harder or more difficult concepts in a story. Mm-hmm. So like if there was like death or something like that, they would include it in the story. They would not put like rose tinted lenses over it. They would be like, nope, this is, just going to do it. Yeah. So that's cool. But also it was still Wishbone. So if you did by chance like Wishbone, prepare to rejoice, because it announced in July 2020, they are going to be making a movie out of this at some point.
Story, Wishbone.
Who cares?
I will say that's this. I've known that song forever. There's that jingle. And so, like, I just didn't even realize that I didn't fully remember what the fucking show was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as, like, I first off want to say, I don't know if I've ever heard someone go more nuclear on something than Lisa did in the past, like, 15 minutes.
Was that worse than I Spy?
Oh, yeah, it was much worse than I Spy, because so? I Spy was, like, a single tirade. This was just the entire case was tirade.
This is true.
There was very little information and much tirade.
But I think you covered I Spy, so I didn't even get to go off.
You just did a commentary. You waited till I finished. Like, are you finished? All right, let me tell you what I think about this shit.
I unleashed the beast. Yeah.
Unleashed the beast. But listen, yeah, Wishbone, I think it's because PBS, I mean, they had such low budgets there and everything like that. And I mean, they're just doing their best, you know, with what they got. And I mean, think about, like, Mr. Rogers is one of the greatest shows like people love ever, and it's just a dude playing with fucking puppets, you know, like they probably were like, you know, I mean, Mr. Rogers is getting along pretty well, so we could do a fucking dog in some outfits.
And I tried. There was an episode, I was like, okay, there was an hour long episode called like the Legends of Sleepy Hollow. I was like, bada bing bada boom, I can be there for that. I was watching and I was like, look, we're about 17 minutes in and jack shit has happened yet. 17 minutes of my life. Do you know how many minutes that is in 2021? That's like 4 hours. That's so much time.
Interesting conversion.
I'm just saying that the attention span of people now, maybe just myself, but my attention span is so short that 17 minutes was like, I'm really trying. I tried several times. I did kind of sit with the kids and watch one of the episodes today, and I was just like, I just can't. And even they didn't seem to like it. Even Rosemary was like, I don't know.
This show's really bad.
She was like, I want to watch Shaun the Sheep. I was like, me too, dear. Me too. I'd rather watch Shaun the Sheep. But that's Wishbone. People did like it. I really do. Genuinely, all jokes aside, I do applaud the effort for trying to make something that was educational for children in the respect for classic literature. Respect that. If it would have been a cartoon, it probably would have done a lot better. But that would have meant a lot different budget. So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Just putting a dog in some outfits.
He did some cool jumps. That's cool.
Yeah.
I guess. And he was well-trained. There were several dogs, of course, but the best part about this case is that all those dogs are definitely dead now, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, so when I searched just to look up Wishbone, to look at some different pictures and things, so like people also ask, and just the question is, what is a Wishbone? And then, is Wishbone dead? Which was the second question.
For sure he's dead. There's not a dog that's 25 years old.
Yeah, I know. That'd be insane if he wasn't. 1988 to 2001.
Oof. That's a pretty good run.
Years is pretty solid. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Wishbone. And Preston, listen, we did our best. I think Andy actually came through. I think he was the real MVP of this episode because, wow.
Oh, these are both great. I really liked this one a lot. Hopefully. I will say this, and just for everybody knows, like, PBS rules, I'm so glad that it exists and everything like that, because it does provide super great stuff for kids and everything, and these were super great. It's so wild to me thinking about if stations like this were gone, is just not having a single station that gives a fuck about teaching anything above entertainment and making money. Like, so it's just, you know, just we dab on it and we make fun of it and stuff like that. But just so it's clear, like, at least for me, like, I'm pretty sure Lisa feels the same way, as we still greatly, greatly appreciate these shows and what they meant at the time. Just right now, rewatching them when we're 35 is a little bit rougher.
Yeah, it's true. And you're talking to someone who, like, I get it, but like, I loved all of, like, SpongeBob, like, really stupid humor. So, like, Patrick Starr's laugh is, like, one of the best things in the history of the world. So, like, that can make me laugh. Just, like, 4 seconds of that versus, like, an hour and a half of Wishbone. So, it's different. Just different folks, different strokes. Right. So,
well, let me go ahead and get you guys TF out of here. Where to find us? If you want to get your votes in, check us out on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court.
Mm-hmm.
Or, of course, on Instagram at 90s.court. And if you'd like to show your support from the show and get some bonus content and shoutouts, hop on patreon.com/90courts, and you too can join our faithful crew of wonderful bailups and friends.
Oh, hell yeah.
And as always, honestly, it would be great to see this, because it's been a hot minute since we've had any new ones. Hop on Apple Podcasts or iTunes and leave us a nice 5-star rating and review. We really appreciate it. And honestly, telling friends about our show is also great. We love any feedback and just letting people know, hey, this show's kind of funny. I like it. You can say kind of funny because, like, you know, we're kind of funny. I think that's fair.
I think that's honest.
I think we're kind of funny.
Yeah.
Lisa, did you have any parting remarks before we depart?
Man. Hey, episode 69 next week. Hachi.
Nice.
We're going to need to figure out something really funny for next week. Or, like, just appropriate. We'll
just
figure
extremely
out something.
Sexual.
I'm into it. And, like, what was it? Is it Basic Instinct, the one? Wait, which is the one with Susan? Oh,
that's Basic Stone. Instinct is what you're thinking.
Okay,
of.
Thank you. So I cannot think of any of the words right now, but you're following. So anyway, episode 69 next week.
We love you guys.
Stay. Oh no, that's your thing.
You can say it. Stay rad.
Bye, guys.